listening to the Simple Worship Podcast, recorded each week at University Christian Church in Fort Worth, Texas. To learn more about our services, ministries, and outreach opportunities, please visit universitychristian.org. Well, the lectionary, the assigned readings are that we use here, take us to the Gospel of John this week. John is a very different gospel from the other three, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It starts out with this mystical statement about Jesus' identity. It's something that we hear almost every year at Christmas Eve, that he was, from the beginning, the Word, and that the Word was with God, and that this Word was God, and that he was life to all people, and he was light that would not be overcome by darkness, and that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That's how the Gospel of John starts. And then Jesus appears, calls a few disciples, and then in chapter 2 of John, he performs his first miracle, or what John calls signs. Does anybody know what the first miracle was in the Gospel of John? Bible trivia? I heard it. Yep, turned water into wine at the wedding in Cana. Good job. You get the prize. I don't know what the prize is, but there you go. Just water. Yeah, water. Do what you can with it. So then Jesus goes to Capernaum with his mother, his brothers, and his disciples, and it says they stayed there for a few days. That's where today's scripture passage picks up, and there is a lot going on in today's scripture passage, so I want to give you a little bit of background. First, there is some scripture background that you need to know. One of them is from Psalm 69. It's a psalm of David. We title it the Prayer for Deliverance from Persecution. It says things like, God, save me when I'm sinking. Save me when I'm in threat of drowning. I've got so many enemies. I'm in distress, but I continue to praise you. And then it says, it is zeal for your house that has consumed me. So keep that in mind. Psalm 69 says, it is zeal for your house that consumes me. And then there's the prophet Zechariah, who foretells a day when everything on earth will be as holy as the items in the temple. And Zechariah says, and there shall no longer be traitors, T-R-A-D-E-R-S, not traitors, but traitors, in the house of the Lord of hosts on that day. Okay, so keep those scriptures in mind. In this, there are several characters. There's Jesus, the Jews, the disciples, there's a narrator, and then there's us. The narrator speaks to the readers, to us. And then there's a timeline we need to keep in mind. The disciples in this story are often remembering that this story happened. So they're placed somewhere in the future. And remember that John was written after the Roman Empire had destroyed the temple. Okay, that's a lot of information, but it's some background that will help you put this scripture into some context. So the temple, by the time the Gospel of John is written, has been destroyed. It is no more. Hear these words from John chapter 2, starting at verse 13. The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle. He also poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. He told those who were selling doves, take these things out of here. Stop making my father's house a marketplace. His disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house will consume me. The Jews said to him, what sign can you show us for doing this? Jesus answered them, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up. The Jews then said, this temple has been under construction for 46 years, and you will raise it up in 3 days? But he was speaking of the temple of his body. After he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. That's the end of the reading. If you look in the Bible, most Bibles will title this or have a heading there that says, Jesus cleanses the temple. This is a story that appears in all four of the Gospels. But in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, this happens way at the end of Jesus' ministry, like the very last week of his life. The Holy Week is when this happens. And it implies in those Gospels that something wrong was going on, that there was dishonesty going on. Jesus said in those Gospels, "You're making my Father's house a den of robbers." And it seems like his response at turning the tables over and driving everybody out was an immediate response. Like he was angry, he flew mad, right? He saw it, he reacted, he got mad, lost his temper, and ran everybody out of the temple. John's version is different. In John's version, this happens at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He's just performed his first miracle, his first sign. This is just chapter 2. And it doesn't seem like anything wrong is really going on. The temple functioned exactly in the way that it functioned, the way that John described it. It was legitimate. It was necessary. Pilgrims traveled from a long distance to go to the temple for Passover and make sacrifices. And instead of traveling with the animals they were going to sacrifice, they would buy them when they got to Jerusalem. And in order to buy them, they had to have the right kind of currency. And so there were the money changers there to change the currency so they could buy the animals to do their sacrifice. But here's what really stands out to me in John's version that is not in the other versions. Almost in passing, it says, "Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple." This took me down a rabbit hole. Do you know how much skill and time it takes to make a whip? I know a lot more about whip making now than I did last week. There are so many different kinds of whips, so many different techniques of braiding whips. Where did he get the cords? Where did he buy them from? There are tools for cutting the cords to certain lengths. Where did he get the tools? Then there's the time to sit down and braid the whip. Even if Jesus had walked in, flew mad, by the time he got the cords and found the tools and sat down and braided the whip, you would think that he had calmed down just a little bit. So one of the commentators I read this week said, "Jesus is involved in performance art." And I was like, what? I don't know about that. But the more I've reflected on it, especially with this whip business, they might be onto something. Jesus, what if he's doing a scripture-based memorable display so that people would see what was going on? He's making a statement about who he really is. This whole gospel begins with this focus on Jesus's divinity and how God, through the person of Jesus, became human. So here he is at the beginning, the place to be for Passover in Jerusalem at the temple, an important ritual for faithful folks, and he grinds everything to a halt. Like all activity stops. Money cannot be exchanged. Animals available for sacrifice have been scattered. Pilgrims have prepared for this. They have traveled with plans to sacrifice and participate in this important ritual. Now they're like, what are we going to do now? We can't do what we came here to do. He makes a spectacle. And then when the leaders understandably ask him, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? He has this very strange response. He says, "Destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up." Well, Jesus, nobody said anything about destroying the temple. What are you talking about? Even the disciples are confused by what Jesus is saying. The narrator tells us that it wasn't until after his resurrection that they remembered this scene and recognized what he was saying. He wasn't talking about the temple. He was talking about himself. He was talking about his body. The temple was the place where, for centuries, the faithful believed God's presence abided. The place where human and divine meet, a holy place. But with the incarnation, Now Jesus is that place. Now this is not to be interpreted as anti-Jewish, anti-temple, because the readers of John's gospel were Jewish folks. They were Jewish communities who were trying to follow Jesus and live out their faith in a world where the temple no longer existed. So with Jesus displaying the temple, Jesus was giving a prophecy of his own in a way. He was saying that God's not confined to a building. God's not confined to a place. In Jesus, God was flesh, a body that can be hugged and touched and scratched and hurt and beaten and loved and killed, just like ours. But none of that, nothing can be done to the body that is greater than God's power, greater than God's presence within us. Even if the temple is gone, even if powers oppress and prevail, even if we are misunderstood or ignored or hurt, God lived in flesh through Jesus. God knows how it feels. God knows our pain. And even death cannot overcome God's power, which is what Easter is all about. This journey of Lent that we're taking to Easter to remind us that nothing can overcome God's love. Nothing can overcome God's power. I think the fact that we are sort of crammed into this little room reminds us that you don't have to be in a certain place to worship. We've been displaced from across the hall. Now, that's not quite the same as the temple being destroyed, but it's a reminder. I told you, if you were here last week, that I went to visit my family in North Carolina this week, and I did. It was a great visit. And there's lots of churches in the community where I live. Nobody can pay the light bill, but everybody has their own church. And most of these churches have little signs in the front where they can put, you know, have the little letters with the sermon title or some kind of message. Often I roll my eyes at those messages. Sometimes they're kind of cheesy. Sometimes they're kind of judgmental. You know what I'm talking about. Like, if you think it's hot here, ... But I rode by one little church, and they had a sign that said, Jesus 2024, our greatest hope. And at first I was like, they forgot to take down the New Year's message. But then I was like, no. That was like a campaign slogan. Then I did roll my eyes. But then I kept thinking about it. It just kept coming to me. I was like, they might be onto something. I don't watch a lot of regular TV, like network TV with commercials and stuff, but my mom does. And every commercial was election stuff. And it just will wear you down. And in an election year, we hear a lot of talk. Most of it is mean-spirited, designed to scare us about what's going to happen if the party that you don't like wins. We hear promises about how this candidate, that candidate, they're our hope. They're going to save us. And if we don't elect these folks, then our democracy, our way of life, our morals, our values will crumble. All of that will go away. Everything we hold dear will crumble and be destroyed if that other evil party wins. Now, that probably won't happen, but it could. And then what? If we place all of our hope, if our salvation depends on systems or governments or candidates or politicians, several things might happen. One, we become so convinced that that person, that party, and by extension us, are right and the other side is evil and wrong, that we lose who we truly are, who God has called us to be for the sake of power and being in control. Or We become jaded with the whole thing and cynical and bitter. We're definitely going to be disappointed because humans are going to disappoint us. Jesus' actions in the temple that day remind us not to place our hope, our salvation, in things that can be scattered to the wind. When we place our hope in Jesus, it doesn't matter who wins the election. It matters. But our salvation is not in a politician. It's not in a party. It's not in any of that stuff. When we place our hope in Jesus, we know that we're on a solid foundation, that God's love, God's mercy is greater than anything else that we can put our hope in. And that's where we find that life that begins this Gospel of John, that life that is the light, light that can never be put out by any darkness or evil.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Simple Worship Podcast. If you enjoyed today's sermon, please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others. To learn more, please visit universitychristian.org.